to the mountains. We'll stay up all night long, 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 staring at the stars up in the sky. And I'll tell you that I love ya, and all the reasons why, lie. You make me feel like, you make me feel like, you make me feel like it's invincible. You make me feel like, you make me feel like, you make me feel like it's invincible. Yeah, I know it's so. You make me feel like it's invincible.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, Friday mornings at 9. Join me as we explore topics like health and wellness, prosperity, inner peace, the law of attraction, and more. Tap into good vibrations to start your weekend feeling uplifted and optimistic. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. You might be listening on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And wherever you're listening from, thank you for joining me today. So our guest is Karen Zizzo. She is author of a couple of books. Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and Life is what we're going to be discussing today. And welcome to the show, Karen.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Now, first of all, you actually have a very interesting story about something that happened with your young son. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I guess that's always a good place to start because it gives me the qualifications to sort of talk about all of these lessons that were learned as a direct result of this story. And I have three children. I live in Ontario, first of all, so, you know, we're talking over time zones
Canadian.
Here.
Canadian,
yay! Yeah. And this event happened quite a few years ago. I have three children, and my oldest son right now is 31, but back when he was 7 years old, he was given 3 months to live with something called neuroblastoma, and I'm sure some of your listeners know what that is. It's cancer of the lymph system, and, you know, he was a totally healthy child. It was just something that sort of turned up almost overnight, and I'll just give you sort of the quick synopsis of, you know, because I've written a book about that, but it's quite an interesting story. He came home from hockey one Saturday morning. My husband took off all his hockey equipment and noticed that there was a lump on the right side of his neck, and he thought, oh, well, you know, he's just been hit by a hockey stick or he's fallen into the boards or something like that. But we watched it all weekend, and by the end of the weekend, Sunday night, it was really quite large, the size of an orange. And my husband was really, he's a family doctor, I should tell you. So as he was watching it, he didn't like it because there wasn't anything on the other side of the neck, which would infer that there was something viral, you know, going on. So he asked me to take him to the doctor, our family doctor, on Monday morning, which led to a chest x-ray and some other things. And that doctor called us on the Monday night and asked my husband when he picked up the phone after work if he was sitting down. And he said, yeah, why should I be sitting down? And he said, well, I have something to tell you. He said, we've found a 7x7 centimeter mass in your son's chest, which is, for your listeners, is the size of a grapefruit in a little 7-year-old's chest cavity.
Wow. Touching
the aorta of his heart, touching his spine, a very huge tumor. And, of course, we had no idea that this was the case. And doctors, of course, my husband's mind was running ahead. Oh, my goodness, what could this be? And so they said we had to start with the pediatric oncologist the very next day. And, you know, this was the first experience of having, like, an ill child. So, you know, I had three healthy kids, so this was sort of like happening overnight. And we started, at the Children's Hospital in the city that we live in. And the very next day, they took a biopsy from the neck and put it under microscope and saw the cancer cells. And given the tumor in his chest as well, said neuroblastoma. This is, very serious. It's very rapid-moving cancer, and he will be dead in 3 months. And we said to him, Well, wait a minute. Can you give us a 5% chance that it's not the right diagnosis or it's something else or something else is going on? And they said, no, we're not giving you any. At that time, it was just devastating. We're not giving you any, chance that it's anything other than what we say. And there had been no recorded cases of kids living with neuroblastoma at the age of 7. Sometimes a baby or a 2- or 3-year-old would actually, they'd be able to catch it and be able to deal with it, and they would, live, but not this age group. So it was pretty tough stuff. I guess the point here, and one of the huge lessons that came out of this, was to never take anybody's hope away, because I should stop here and let you interject for a second, and I'll tell you the rest of the story, which is quite miraculous. In fact, the first book is called Ask and You Shall Receive, A Miracle for Stephen, and it really is the story. I had to write the story about 15 years later. It was kind of a burden on my shoulder because it was such a beautiful story, and it wasn't one I was supposed to keep quiet about. I was supposed to tell a lot of people for the purpose of giving other people hope. It's quite a story, and I could keep going at the moment.
Well, yeah, we'll continue on with the story because I think people should know at the end of the story. But yeah. I mean, you have no hope at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems so cruel. I mean, even if it's a 99.9% chance, I mean, stranger things have happened.
Exactly. And that was our point. That's what my husband was almost begging for, that 0.1% chance of hope, because, in fact, that's what you live on. And what I discovered, and especially after, really thinking about this after the fact, and, was it's like oxygen. If you take away oxygen, obviously we die. We can't breathe. And when you take away all of our hope, right down to there is no hope, it's the same thing. If you think about it for a second, I mean, when you don't have hope, you don't have anything. And I think a lot of people take it for granted, and we have all variations on a theme of, a little bit of hope and a lot of hope, but to have no hope is essentially like, removing your oxygen, and that just was a horrible thing. And that was the thing that stuck out as the huge, huge lesson at the end of this, that none of us has the right. In fact, we should be giving people hope, not taking it away, and none of us have the right to take it away, at all. Because things, like you said, happen. Miracles happen. Things change. It could be a mistake. Other things might come into play to alleviate it somehow and it not be quite as bad as we initially thought, all those sorts of things.
And so what happened with your son? Tell us.
Okay.
I've read about it, so I know.
And what? It's good to tell the story because it's a great place to start, and then from where I come, But what happened was they decided to take the tumor out of his chest because they thought, maybe they could give him a couple of more months if they took what they considered the primary source of the cancer. And they told my husband that the tumor was definitely malignant. Once again, 99.99% chance that it was malignant. And I guess because it was such a devastating prognosis, my husband, being a doctor, sort of had Stephen in the coffin already, like knowing that, science says that this isn't going to work. And I, maybe because of the way I was raised, or I knew intuitively that there was a lot of stuff beyond us and things that we didn't understand. And my father had died when I was a little girl, so I'd always had sort of instances and signs and symbols of our loved ones still being around us, and that there was power within us and power around us. And, I just knew that, okay, I have to not just sort of sit here and, listen to this, diagnosis and, lay down and die sort of thing. I have a son here, and it really became apparent to me that I had to use every atom of my being to try to change this somehow. And it wasn't that I was in denial. It was just that I didn't want to go there yet. And if he was going to die, and when he took his last breath, I would have to deal with it. But until that point, I was going to try to affect it some other way. And so immediately I said, well, we have to start to pray. We have to get everybody that we know to intend his healing. And don't forget, this was back in 1987, so we weren't really talking about the power of attraction or the power of intention. We weren't really talking about networking. And I became the ultimate networker, where we asked everybody, you know, everybody to pray. I was teaching at the community college in my town, and I asked everybody, all the staff, everybody. We asked everybody at our church, everybody at our kids' schools. My husband asked all his patients, and we asked all of them to ask everybody they knew to pray for Stephen's healing. It was an impossible situation, but we thought by having thousands of people praying that maybe we could make a change. We had to try, at least. That was my feeling. And where I got the strength for that is I had gone home that first night when we got this devastating news, and I was an absolute mess. I opened the Bible, and I said, you know, I probably hadn't done that in years, I'm being quite honest. I was raised a Roman Catholic, but I was a bit of a rote Roman Catholic, if you know what I mean. I go to church on Sunday, maybe, sometimes, a couple times here and there, but not all the time. But I had been raised, you know, knowing the stories of healing and you know, Jesus healing the blind and the sick and all that sort of thing. So I kind of went home and opened this Bible and said, and it was one that had been given to us when we were married, my husband and I, had to dust, you know, take the dust off the top of it sort of thing. And I said, oh, God, you know, talk to me. And, you know, he took me three times. I did it three nights in a row, thinking maybe, you know, I was going to get more information, but my eyes always fell, and I didn't have a card in the page or anything like that. And this is the only piece that I can quote from the Bible, but it was John 16:23-24, and it was the piece that said, you know, that whatever you, you can go directly to the Father and you can ask him, and he will give you what you ask for because you use his name, use my name. And using my name, you will ask for what you want and receive it, and your joy will be full. And, you know, I'm just repeating that because for some reason or other, those words jumped off the page to me, so that it was like, you mean if I ask, you know, and I ask in your name that I can get what I want sort of thing? And we don't really kind of think that way, but I guess, you know, I was desperate, and I said, okay, I mean, I know that this has happened in the past. I know some of the biblical stories from, you know, when I was a little girl growing up and so on. I said, well, there were miracles 2,000 years ago. Why can't there be one today? And so I asked for it, and I believed it really could happen. And it was interesting. My husband, of course, had a foot in each camp. You know, he's a scientist, so he had a foot in the science camp, but he also had a foot in, you go, girl. Like, you know, like we know there's so much that goes on beyond us that we can't always explain. And this is just like your show, the spiritual show and synchronicity, and people will agree that stuff goes on all around us sometimes that we don't understand. And so I was trying to tap into that. And honestly, we ended up with a miracle, because when they took that tumor out, it came out benign, and the doctors laid their medical reputations on that it was going to come out malignant. That was the first miracle. And then they said, okay, well, geez, this changes everything. Stephen has now what we call lymphoma, and kind of a chance to live. So here was things changing. We were going crazy with everything changing and our emotions like all over the place. But here was like a chance at life now. But they said he would have to have 3 years of chemotherapy. And my husband was kind of like, oh, my goodness, he's a 7-year-old scrawny little kid, 3 years of chemo. Back in 1987, chemo was pretty tough stuff.
Brutal, yeah.
Brutal. It wasn't kind of like what we're dealing with today. And, you know, as a doctor, he would say, I'm not sitting here, you know, talking to you saying don't get medical treatment and don't do what your doctors say. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that there's more. So, yes, take the medical treatment, but don't forget about prayer, and don't forget about alternative things, and don't forget about all the other things that you could add to your healing process. Do you know what I mean? And so we never did have the chemo. I'm just giving you the short version here, which I talk about everything and all the little stories around it in my book. But we took him home after, I guess, about 2 weeks from the hospital, and they were setting up, he had a Hickman catheter into his heart for the chemotherapy, and they had him all prepared for that. But things were changing in a positive manner. And because they were going forward, because of the extent of the prayer and support and everything that we were getting, we both sort of intuitively knew that we just needed to go home for a couple of weeks and, like, calm down and see how Stephen did over the next couple of weeks. And the doctors and nurses all said, oh, he'll be back. Like, you guys are crazy. You're just, you know, you're putting him in more harm's way by not starting this Friday instead of waiting for 2 weeks and this kind of thing. And the really funny thing is we kept up the prayer and, you know, so on. And he just started to get a little bit better and a little bit better. And we never did go back for the chemo. And he did get tested, you know, again at 6 months and 12 months. And you know how it goes, 2 years, 5 years, you still got that thing in the pit of your stomach for mm-hmm. 5 years until he's cleared. And they never found the cancer again after that. And they had had cancer cells under the microscope. That there's, and with lots of people looking at them. So it's not like I always get, well, wasn't it just a big, you know, misdiagnosis? And when I asked my husband, again, he's, as I said, a family physician and a coroner here in Ontario, he says, look, I know where we started, and it was like death, and I know where we ended up, and we basically almost have walked this kid away. There's something that happened in the middle that I can't explain, and I can only put it down to divine, and I haven't seen a miracle before, but this is as close as I, you know, can say that this is a miracle, and this was his own kid. And, you know, he, being a doctor, he would never really want to admit that, except for the fact that it happened right in front of him, and it happened to our child. So this is why today he doesn't really care what anybody thinks about him, as and I don't either, because I've walked the walk, and he's walked the walk, and we know what we know. And this led to writing the book, and it led to me speaking, and I do a lot of inspirational speaking now around this. I wrote a second book, which I know we want to talk about today, and that really encompasses the lessons that we learned through this experience. And because of my teaching background, and I was also a corporate trainer and so on, I guess that was that part in me that said, well, you know, I got to get this into book form. I've got to kind of put some lessons to it, and I've got to share it with people. I almost felt a responsibility to.
And he's all grown up now, right?
Yeah, he's 31 years old and a medical doctor himself. He went away to Australia, actually, for 6 years to medical school. He didn't get in Canada. Like, you know, we all know how hard it is to get in Canada. And applied to the University of Sydney and got in over there. And he was away for 6 years. And he just got back last year. And he's doing his residency in family medicine over here in Ontario. So we've got him back. And, you know, this kid knows that he's here, not necessarily because of medicine, but because of something beyond that.
Wonderful.
It's quite interesting because, you know, even as a little kid growing up, he said, did I really have cancer? And did this really happen? And it has totally changed him. And he's quite an amazing young man. Of course, I'm his mother, right? So,
I'm sure if he ever has to give a diagnosis, he won't be handing out a hopeless.
You'd never hear him say there's no hope. In fact, I get asked all the time, you know, how does he impact others sometimes because of what he's gone through? And I have beautiful examples of even his friends growing up where they said, well, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that. And he said, what do you mean you can't do this? You can't do that. You can do anything. You just put your mind to it. And he had just one particular little story, if you want to hear it. He had a friend who really didn't think he could go on to go on to university. His parents never really encouraged that, and but he really wanted to be a teacher. And as you know, teachers have to have a degree first before they go to teacher's college and on. And this kid really didn't believe in himself, and he was a friend of Steve's, and Steve said, look, he said, you know what? I'm going away to Australia 6 years to do a medical degree. You can go to university, do your three-year or your four-year degree and teacher's college, and you'll be done before I get home. He said, so how about you do that? And his friend said, hey, I never really thought about it like that. You're right. And he worked, this friend of his worked part-time to get the money because his family didn't have, you know, money for him to go to school. And perfect example of Stephen being his cheerleader, you know, because he really believed that this kid could do it, but he needed somebody to help him. And that's sort of what I'm going to talk about as we get into the lessons.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for a break now. So we are speaking with Karen Zizzo, and we're also going to move into her book, Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and Life. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm Marie Bernard, and I have a pair of tickets to see Wayne Dyer. He's coming to Vancouver on November 23rd. He'll be at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. And I have a pair of tickets to give away today on the show. I think I'm going to give them away during the next break. So not this break, but the next break coming up in another 15 minutes or so. So keep listening for the cue to call if you want to tickets to see Wayne Dyer here in Vancouver on November 23rd. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Karen Zizzo. She is author of Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and Life. Hi, welcome back to the show, Karen.
Okay, great. I'm back.
Hi. So after talking about your son and how he survived a brutal cancer diagnosis with the doctors giving him zero hope of living, and now he is 31 and with a medical degree and practicing medicine now. So the first portion of your book, Spiritual Strategies for Work for Success in Work and Life, actually starts out with a discussion on gratitude.
Yes. Yeah.
So can you tell us about how gratitude led you to this work?
You know, I was so grateful as a result of this. I mean, as you can imagine, as any parent would be, you know, when you were told your child was going to die, and then right in front of you, you know, you have all this take place. And I guess, you know, I should probably start by saying that when all of this happened in that first night when we were in the hospital room with our son, and, you know, he was, now they had him hooked up to stuff and all that kind of thing, the very first thing that my husband said was a prayer of gratitude. And I have to give him credit for that, because it wasn't where I started. You know, you would think most people would be sort of shaking their hands at God and saying, like, you know, what's going on here? His first prayer, and I believe this just set the tone, was, thank you, God, for the 7 years that we've had Stephen. You know, we pray to have many, many more, but we are also very grateful that, you know, he's been in our life for 7 years. And I'm kind of like looking at him with those big eyes, you know, going, oh, my God, how could you even pray that sort of at this point in time? But we did. We started with gratitude. And I think that's huge in terms of, you know, sort of setting the tone for where we went from there. I tell you that it's kind of the way, and I with all the research that I've done, you know, the 15 years after this happened, before I wrote my book and so on, everything sort of pointed to gratitude. That, you know, the fact that you ask people to pray, like all, everything that sort of happened to sort of impact this was laced with gratitude. And I was thanking people the whole time for their prayers and for their food and for their gifts and so on, and kind of realizing. And it wasn't until much later that we even realized that this whole episode, in fact, was a gift, and that we were thanking God for it. But at the time, you had to go through it. So you may not understand, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you may not understand, you know, what the challenge is that you're going through. You might not get it at the moment, but it's almost like, you know, thanking the universe for, thanking God for maybe putting this challenge in front of me, because you probably intuitively need to grow, you know, in a certain area. And 5 years from now, you're going to look back, and that's exactly what happened. So being grateful, I think, sets the tone for things to go positively.
Wonderful. And so you also talk about finding your life's purpose. So how can people go about doing that?
Yeah, that's how I start the book, and you know, that's I really believe, first of all, and most of us know this, but sometimes we just have to be reminded. You know, what are you passionate about? What is your passion? That's the first thing, and then I know that through prayer, through meditation, through intuitive sort of components, that you get more information, because if you spend some time meditating and being silent, you do get. You get information that comes to you, but I mean, some of that is a process to even learn how to do for some of us with this fast-paced life that, you know, we're all kind of running. But when we get out of sync and when we get out of balance, we know that we have to become quiet. And I know you're in Vancouver, and I know that, you know, it's so beautiful out there. I'm sure that people just love to be out in nature and jogging and going into the mountains and mm-hmm. skiing and the water. And, you know, you've got the perfect natural environment to actually do this. The third one, too, that I think is really important is asking others what they see in you and asking them to honestly tell you what they see in you. So whether it's friends or family or even acquaintances that you may work with and so on, people that are going to be, of course, positive with you. You know, you're not looking for people to put you down, but what they see that you're good at. And I think sometimes people get themselves into ruts and into jobs and things like that that they really aren't meant to be doing, and they need to sort of take control of that situation and maybe really sit down and think about, you know, if money wasn't an object, what would I be doing? And then try to create that situation for themselves.
And what do you say to, because I actually have a friend who is going through this right now, and I've asked mm-hmm. him so many times, you know, if you could do anything, magic wand, whatever, what would it be? That's the standard question. And he can't answer it. He's yeah. really, really stuck. And I'm just wondering what kind of advice you would have for someone who is that stuck.
Well, has he asked anybody like you or people around him to help him with that? Sometimes you can't do it alone. Sometimes you can't see the stuff right in front of your eyes, but other people can, and they can help sift and sort through it for you. That's one thing. And if he's okay with the answers, actually, that come back, because some people don't ask because they don't want to know. You know what I'm saying? But I really believe in the meditative components, i.e. getting quiet, going within. Because let's face it, we know deep down inside when we go within, when we stop long enough to allow our higher self and our intuitive to kind of come through and help us with that, he may not be doing enough of that, you know. He may be wanting somebody to stand in front of him and tell him what he should do. And, I mean, that would be the easy way. And we would all like that. We all say that from time to time. But it really requires self-work to find exactly, you know, what it is that you need to be doing. And sometimes through synchronicity, the right people will come in front of you, the right people will, you know, chat with you that will get you on the right road to discovering what it might be. And sometimes you have to try on a few things, and then you realize, my goodness, I really love this, and, you know, I want to do my own business, or I want, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then you go and find out the people that can help you do that and help you be successful at it.
And then you say, ask and you shall receive. So I'm guessing before you can start asking, you probably need to know what it is you want.
Yeah, and even asking for help to determine that. So, yeah, you don't really have to put one before the other. I mean, that was a huge one for us, ask and you shall receive. And I even do a talk called Ask, Believe, Receive. And you ask for what it is that you want, but you really have to believe you're going to get it. It's like, you know, when I asked for prayer and I asked for healing, as an example, when I always go back to my story, I really, really believed I was going to get it. I wasn't just like hoping or maybe it's going to happen. Like, I wasn't wishy-washy about it. I decided, I committed that it was going to happen. And I believe that's partly why I received it. And I have a really good, you've probably heard this yourself before, but there's a really good quote by a gentleman who was a famous explorer, and it was during one of his Himalayan expeditions, and he said, until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth. I'm reading this to you because I love it so much. Mm-hmm. The ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then Providence moves too. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. I love that. I've got that like on a little sign in my home, too, because it's like when you commit to something, when you ask and you really believe it's going to happen, it seems like everything else kind of comes together to help you. You know, some people will say the universe comes together, the right people come in front of you, synchronicity happens all around you. Why? Because you've committed. You're not wishy-washy about it. That would be the advice I would give, for sure.
So, Karen, and I want to bring this up because they say asking you shall receive, asking it is given. So many of us have watched The Secret.
Right.
And in The Secret, they talk about, like, you can get a red car if you just really believe that you're going to get one. And the question I'm going to pose to you is it the red car or is it asking you'll receive things that are actually meaningful in your life?
Yes, yes. And people ask me, like, you know, can you win the lottery that way? Wouldn't we all like to? That's not what the universe is trying to do. They're trying to pull things together that you've part of your evolvement, in other words, like your spiritual, your higher self. So maybe getting the red car. I mean, you can go out and make that happen yourself, right? I mean, we all do. If we want a certain house or we want a certain spouse or whatever it happens to be, I mean, we can ask and we can do the things to do that. But, I mean, if you're looking for, like, the red car to materialize in front of your house, like, forget it. But I think I really do believe...
I have heard of people winning the lottery, though.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get Cynthia Stafford on this show because she wrote down $112 million
yeah.
and she meditated on it and then she won it.
Wow.
But that's not the rule usually.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to discount that though because she may have really known, and it depends what the purpose of that was for her.
She was like saving her I think it was her brother's. She was looking after her brother's kids, and they'd been put into foster care. So, I mean, it had a deeper meaning than the money.
Right. It's all about the intention.
Yeah.
The intention was right. She was raising money. You hear this all the time that people... Michael J. Fox, I just watched that show last night where he was interviewed on CNN about his foundation and raising over $200 million for Parkinson's disease. The intention is right. They're doing good in the world. To win, you know, $2 million lottery so you can buy a bigger house and boats and cars and just have a good time, that's not for the greater good and that's not for your higher self. Because you always hear those stories of people that do that and then they're broken, bankrupt 2 years later because they weren't doing the right things with the money. And part of that is even if you won that kind of money, part of it is giving it to a good cause, too, like a portion of it. Like, I would say that if you won that kind of money, part of what you've got to do is give some of it back.
Oh, and this woman we're talking about, she's given away millions to people.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's your answer right there. I can totally understand that one because her intention was right. You know, and they knew by her getting that money and intending it that she was going to do the right thing with it. They're not going to put it in the hands of someone that is going to squander it, you know, or not do the right thing or didn't have the right intention.
Well, I do have to say she has some nice shiny cars now, but it's not like she's just been like mine. The intention was there, and it was. I mean, she was able to save her family, really.
And she shared it. It was a bigger cause, right? Yeah. Now, yeah. You know, I would say it's okay to have a nice house and a nice car and some nice clothes and stuff, but if you've got your priorities straight, that's just stuff, as we all know. And
exactly.
Stuff's nice to have, and we all like stuff, but it's. Stuff doesn't really make us happy. The happiness comes from helping others. The happiness comes from making a difference in someone else's life. You know, that's where the happiness comes from. And sometimes it takes people a whole lifetime to learn that one.
Definitely.
You know, sometimes they get it in their 60s, you know, but isn't it nice that you get it in your 20s? Yeah.
Well, it's time for another break. So we are speaking with Karen Zizzo. She is author of Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and life, and I have a set of Wayne Dyer tickets. Wayne Dyer is coming to Vancouver. He's going to be at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre on November 23rd, and this is for all the proceeds are going to good causes. It's a charity event, so it's definitely worth picking up a pair of tickets for that. But if you'd like to score free tickets, give me a call right now during the break, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487 if you would like a pair of tickets to see Wayne Dyer at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre on November 23rd. We'll be back with more Synchronicity and more Karen Zizzo in a moment.
Rude boys, don't cry, don't cry.
Rude boy, don't cry.
Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. You might be listening on 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Karen Zizzo, and I want to say congratulations to Jennifer. She's going to see Wayne Dyer on November 23rd. So thank you. If you tried to get through and you didn't get the pair of tickets today, that's okay, because I have a few more pairs to give away in the coming weeks. So keep listening every Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, for your chance to see Wayne Dyer. And I have some news. I'm going to be interviewing him, I believe, on Wednesday. It's going to be pre-recorded, and then I'll be playing it on the show. So that's definitely, we're talking about intentions, and I've been wanting to and intending to interview Wayne Dyer for like 2 years now, since the show started. So it's been a long time coming, but it is happening. And so thank you for listening and for your support and growth as this show grows, because if it wasn't for all the listeners, then it wouldn't have been possible to have Wayne Dyer on the show. So thank you so much for that. And so welcome back to the show, Karen.
Okay, I'm here.
Hi.
That was great. Good for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm super excited.
I've seen him a couple of times and spoken to him myself, actually, with some of the Hay House conferences that I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
He's lovely, yes.
Yeah, you'll enjoy interviewing him for sure.
Yeah, I met him last time he was in Vancouver, and he was kind enough to do a little promo, you're listening to Synchronicity, for me. So,
great.
Yeah, really nice man.
Right.
Okay, so let's get back to your book, Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and Life. And you have some, in part two of your book, you have the lessons. So can we briefly go over some of these lessons?
Yeah, we can. Again, sort of where I started was my story, but then I felt that it was time to take those lessons and put them into spiritual strategies for everyone, so that they could use it in their own work and their own life. And when I started the second book, it really was going to be a business book. I was going to go into corporate with it, but you know, as I started to do it more and more, it's so interrelated with life that I really couldn't sort of say, you know, this is only for business, this is only for work. I had to call it work and life, because it's so interconnected, you just can't separate, right? Although I think people do try to compartmentalize their work life and then their personal life, but as we all know.
I just want to throw something out there, actually, because I was noticing this mm-hmm. on the bus on the way here. Someone was saying to another student on the bus, where do you live? And he's like, oh, I live over there. And just hearing those words, where do you live?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, you hear it so often, but today it just kind of struck me as odd, because, I mean, you sleep at your house and you eat at your house and you get dressed, but you don't really live there.
I know.
You live everywhere.
Right?
For the first time today.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it's funny, those are those, like you say, those little things that hit you from time to time.
Yeah.
That really make you think, and you know, what's it all about? And it's true, how much time we spend at work and how much, and you do, you know, it's it changes, of course, over your life and so on. But we're all pretty guilty of being a little bit of workaholics, at some point in our life. But you're right. I mean, we're home very seldom these days, aren't we?
Unless you work from home. But
yeah,
still,
unless you work from home, and then that's wonderful, too.
But, I mean, I think what you're saying about how people compartmentalize their work and their life, but if you're living your life's work, then...
Yeah. I just feel that I think people try to do that, and maybe they have more in the past, but I really believe that it's pretty hard to do that. And, you know, because you know yourself, if things have gone on in your personal life, it's pretty hard to keep them totally separate from what you're doing during that day, for instance, and the people that you're coming into contact with. It's pretty hard to compartmentalize it, although I think people do. But anyways, back to the lessons. The first one that I really, wanted to talk about was taking a leap of faith. And I think that that's a pretty huge one. And it's kind of connected to the ask and you shall receive. But lots of times you have an idea in your head, or it's about creating a clear vision, really. And so what do you want to accomplish, and what are the results you're looking for? And I think that we all know that we move forward after we see it in our minds first, because you have to see it, you have to envision it, and it's not likely to come to pass unless, you know, you figured it out sort of upstairs. So then you got to take that leap of faith, because you've got the vision now, which is great and has to be a clear one, but sometimes you're not even quite sure how you're going to get there. So where do you start, and what pieces fit to get there, and, you know, and kind of taking a look along the way, how well are you doing? And this is when you bring other people in and so on to help you. But in life, when you create that clear picture of what you truly want, then you'll be more aware of the opportunities as they show up and the synchronicities that will start to happen. And a little bit back to what I was saying there about making the commitment to something, but taking that leap of faith instead of saying, it's not going to happen. I mean, and we're going to eventually get to positive, you know, focusing on the positive, because I think they're kind of all wrapped up together. In terms of making the commitment and keeping the clear vision of what you want. And then sometimes taking that leap of faith means that you have to release old beliefs. You might have to take on, you know, different ways of looking at something or life, different circumstances. And that sometimes includes changing something in yourself. That's really huge because, you know, as most people like to do, they like to blame everybody else, you know, blame the government, blame their parents, blame their boss. And very often it's just the changes that you have to make yourself in yourself, because it's all about how you handle it and how you choose to see it. Right?
Definitely.
So, yeah, absolutely.
And then after the leap of faith is having a faithful focus and self-discipline.
Yeah, well...
That's the discipline. We have to have self-discipline?
Oh, well, you do. You know, nothing happens unless you're sort of somewhat disciplined about it, right? I mean, and that's part of the faithful focus. You really want it. You're making a commitment to it again, and the discipline to do it. Like, even if you work, I'm thinking of if you're building a business, for instance, you'd have to do something with that business every day, whether it's a few more calls or whether it's reading something that will, because as long as you're focusing on it, you're going to get it. But if it's just one of these things you're doing on the side, and, you know, I'll do it this week, I won't do it that week, I mean, and then you say, well, it didn't work. Well, sure, it didn't work because you didn't focus on it, right? So that's the part about self-discipline.
Fair enough. And then you find a mentor.
Yeah, huge, right? Find a mentor. I mean, look for your heroes. Look for people that have walked the walk before you. Actually, take a good look at the people a little further along, maybe in the career you're in, and especially if you like them and you like the life that they're living, why not chat with them about, you know, mentoring with you a little bit. And most people, like, love that, especially if they've been successful at what they're doing and they're taking on sort of maybe a younger person. And so that's all about asking again. So you ask for help, like, who's successful? And I always have that little story about the eagles and the turkeys. You know, you want to be an eagle or you want to be a turkey? And, I mean, it's all about who you hang around with, who you're having lunch with. You know, spend time with like-minded people, uplifting, enthusiastic people that are successful, happy people.
So, you know, Karen, when it comes to finding a mentor, does it it actually has to be someone who can physically, like, speak with you? Or are you just talking about, like, someone I look up to is Oprah? Well, I'm not going to call Oprah up and say, hey, want to go for coffee? She's pretty busy.
No, I mean, you can have, you know, some of the icons that you like, the Wayne Dyers and Oprah and so on. Certainly they can be a mentor to you. You might want to study their lives. Like, a good place to go is, mm-hmm. is to read about them. And you know what? You'll find most of these people did not start out successful, that there was a real journey of, you know, their steps, just what I'm talking about, you know, and being disciplined about it and getting up at a certain time every day or starting to, you know, mentor with other people that could help them get where they got. Every one of those people would say that they didn't do it alone, that there was always help that came in the form of people that they sought out, people that they hired, you know, information that they got by asking for it and so on, and then continuing to build and build and build and build. So we don't do anything alone. Anybody who has accolades and is sort of on stage and up there, they didn't get there by themselves. They had marketing people, they had publicists, they had all kinds of people that it was their job to help them. And that is where the gratitude comes back. Some of these people, as long as they're thanking all the time and they're including everybody and they're realizing that, you know, it took a whole team. You heard, you know, Hillary Clinton even say, it takes a village to raise a child. It's the same thing. I believe it takes a whole lot of really dedicated people to have that person sort of be the spotlight or the spokesperson for a particular, you know, for a particular event or a particular thing that they want to put out there.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah.
And then after you found a mentor, now my question is about the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
The mentor, and then the next chapter is attract success with integrity.
Right.
So do you have to do these step by step?
Oh, no, in order? No, not in order at all. But you do have to be aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not like if you have every single one, you're going to have success. And it depends on the individual, too. But I have found, and this was sort of part of how we got through it, that these were the sorts of things that needed to be at least addressed, right, at some point in the process. And, for instance, when we get to the next one, focus on the positive, that has to be happening the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be like item number 9. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you have to develop that positive attitude. And lots of times life is overwhelming. Situations seem impossible. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we can really choose to remain positive. And that word choose is huge, like choice and choosing, because we do have free will and we're allowed every single day to choose. And people say, oh, yeah, well, I really don't have choice. Like, this is coming at me and that's coming at me and all the rest of it. But you can choose how you handle it. You can choose to make it a huge issue. You can choose to say it's part of my learning process and I'm going to get through this positively, you know. So instead of focusing on the obstacle, you focus on the solution, for instance, right? I mean, you've even seen those little signs around. Don't focus on the obstacle, focus on the solution. Look for the good moments. Look for the small successes. You know, because it doesn't happen. You know how they say, I don't know if you read the book about it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. Isn't that the truth? I mean, nobody's an overnight success. But then the joke there is it took 10 years of building. And
well, except Justin Bieber.
Yeah. Well, that's a little different, isn't it? But I guess I'm you know, talking about people that have been extremely successful in life. It's usually about a 10-year process to kind of get there. And that should give people some... you know, they shouldn't be so hard on themselves when they realize it's a process, and enjoy the process. You know, if you're not there like tomorrow, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, just keep going.
And that brings me to the last chapter in part 2 is be consistent in your belief.
Uh-huh.
Throughout the whole process.
Right. I mean, that's the commitment part, and believing that it's going to happen when it looks like it's not. And I always find that that's just about when it's going to happen for you is just about when you're ready to throw it in, throw in the towel, walk away from it, the situation, you know, throw up your hands. That is just the time when you're going to turn the corner and find that it is working. So it's like never, ever give up, you know. Be consistent in your beliefs. And so many times that's exactly when people have given up. It's just too hard at that point. And then had they kept going, just a little bit longer, and got a few more, you know, bits of help and a few more people to even maybe mentor them and so on, then they were going to turn the corner and it was all going to, you know, work kind of the way they wanted it to work. But if you think about the people like that are extremely successful in their careers and stuff, they don't give up at the first little thing that railroads them or, you know, the first little challenge that comes along. They just keep at it. This is their big picture. And they just keep doing all the little things. It's like a step at a time to get there. And that's what, I mean, it's kind of, I was kind of joking about the 10-year overnight success, but that's about it. You know, you can maybe be there in 2 or 3 or 5, but, like, if it takes 10, it's going to take 10 if that's, if you're overriding, you know, what you want in your life. It could take that long, but then I would say enjoy the journey that you're on, you know, instead of, because everybody thinks, like, when I get there, you know, I'll be happy and I'll have this and all blah blah blah, and they find that's not the case. It's never the case. So it's always the journey along the way.
Beautifully said. Well, it's time for another break, so we will be back in a moment. We are speaking with Karen Zizzo, and she is the author of Spiritual Strategies for Success in Work and Life. And we'll be back with more synchronicity in a flash.
We are now going to practice our continental way of eating. We pick up our silverware, index finger in the back of the fork, index finger on top of the knife.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, dining at the Sub is a little less formal.
The Honor Roll Sushi Bar. Get maki rolls, rice bowls, and bento boxes made fresh all day. Don't forget to ask about our party platters. Located in the basement of the Sub, the Honor Roll Sushi Bar is open Monday through Friday. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Coming up in 10 minutes is Scotty's Scenic Drive, so stick around for that. And I just wanted to let you know that coming up in November, I think, we're going to be doing the funding drive here at CITR. So, yeah, I know it's really early, but I just wanted to kind of put that out there and let you know that we're going to be asking for donations in a couple months here, and hopefully you'll be able to dig deep and help us out with that to keep this station running, because we do depend on you, our listeners, to keep us in action. So thank you so much for listening all the time and for supporting us with your fundraising dollars. So welcome back to the show, Karen.
Great, I'm back. Thank you.
So we just have a few minutes left in the show. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you about being consistent in your belief and going for that goal. Now, is there ever a time when it is appropriate to give up on your goal?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd have to specifically know what it is that you're talking about. I mean, perhaps if you were running a business and you were, you know, consistently losing money for, you know, 5 years, and you just started to realize that maybe we had to change course here, or maybe it wasn't working, you know, those things happen. Yeah, but yeah, I'd have to know specifically what you're talking about in order to make that decision, right?
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to finish a little bit by saying that we have to celebrate our victories, too. That's a really important component. I remember we celebrated, you know, when our situation turned out to be a good situation instead of such a hopeless one. And I think that human beings need to do that, because you have to celebrate, you know, where you've been and where you're going. And it's just kind of one of those things that we really, really need. And I know that most of us do celebrate, but sometimes we have to tell ourselves that we do need to celebrate when things have gone well, and we do it for other people. I mean, we celebrate birthdays, we celebrate special occasions, that sort of thing, but celebrate, you know, something going good in your life this week, and just makes you feel good. It's all part of keeping you in that positive and optimistic frame of mind when you're celebrating, instead of just working so hard all the time and then maybe not celebrating. You know, I know a lot of people do, like on a Friday night or Saturday night, it's celebrating the week.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I just wanted to let your listeners know, if I could, that I have a website. It's KarenZizzo.com, KarenZizzo.com, and I do coaching. I do business coaching. I do life coaching, spiritual life coaching, and everything's on my website. If there's anybody that wanted to actually purchase these books or you know, look at doing some coaching.
Wonderful. Yeah, I was going to ask you, where's the best place to pick up your book?
Well, they're at Chapters. I have a distributor in Ontario, so they're going across Canada. But some of the little boutique stores, but you can get them on my website, and then I can directly send it to you. So it's KarenZizzo.com.
Wonderful. And is there anything that you would like to add as we close the show?
Well, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to chat with you. And I've really enjoyed our chat. And, I love Vancouver, that's for sure. So I just want to say hi to everybody out there. And I had actually had a cousin who worked for BC Hydro. I was listening to your commercial there, and she moved out to Vancouver and climbing mountains and all that sort of thing out there, and just loved it. I just wanted to say hi to everybody in Vancouver.
Well, thank you. Hi to everyone in Ontario.
Yeah. See, it's all about coming together, not breaking down the barriers, not putting the barriers up, right?
All right. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for your time. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Me too.
Okay,
Take
Marie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, so again, that was Karen Zizzo. If you'd like to contact her, she's at KarenZizzo.com. Z-I-Z-Z-O is her last name, and Karen with a K. KarenZizzo.com. So speaking of gratitude, I am going to close the show with the Grateful Song by the lovely Surya. You know, she's one of my favorite people on earth, one of my favorite musicians local here to Vancouver. Just love her to death. And so next week is going to be Catherine CHE and Dr. Mao. And then coming up as soon as I possibly can, I will be playing that Wayne Dyer interview. I've got about 15 minutes with him. It's only going to be a 15-minute interview, so I've got to think of something really good and juicy to ask him. If you have any ideas, anything you'd like me to ask him, email me at spiritualshow@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. I will be back next week at 9 a.m. Pacific. I hope that you will tune in again next week. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a wonderful weekend, and remember to be grateful.
With everybody searching just like me, it's easy to see how life is filled with impossibility. Running from fate, looking for an escape is oh so easy. Look around and see. For today.